Hello, welcome back to FYC
for your child self
and our child self.
I'm Alessandra
and I'm Victoria, and welcome back to FYC. I'm just joking.
And we're here this week to discuss a movie that I'm sure anyone who loves animation was absolutely obsessed with this year. It was nominated for an Annie Award, and we're recording this before the Annie Awards, but this episode will be out afterward, so we'll see how it does. It's nominated for Best Picture there, and then it's nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars this year. It is, drumroll please, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse! A sequel to 2018 Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, we're doing all of the adjectives. Those are adjectives? Adverbs. We're doing all of the adverbs. Yeah. Across, through,
into,
inside, outside.
Beyond, under, on top. Okay, anyways.
But today we're going across.
Victoria, what was your cartoon moment of the week?
Oh my god, my cartoon moment of the week. So my girlfriend was out of town this week, and I was watching her dog, because her dog is adorable. And I took her to the office, but I felt, okay, so I guess maybe less cartoon moment of the day, but more like animated movie moment of the day, in that like, I had a little sidekick. She was just, she would not leave my side. Yes. Like, it was giving Rapunzel and Pascal. Like, she would not leave my side. Like, my coworkers, I took her to the office, and my coworkers, like, were like, oh my god, she's so cute. We're going to take her to the other room and, like, fawn over how cute she is. And I said, yeah, sure, do that. Grabbed her, literally walked away. I turned my desk around, opened my computer, and then heard her little pitter-pats come back to me. And I was like, ah, oh, she didn't want to stay in the other room, did she? So, yeah, I think that was my, the most cartoony slash animated moment of my week.
Nice.
What about you?
Mine is not as adorable. It was just me fixing my lamp that looks like a person reading.
Lamp.
And it's actually right behind you.
Oh, it is so cute.
And I got distracted. It's been broken for a while. But basically, like, it's meant to look like, the lampshade is meant to look like a book, and then the light's meant to look like a head, and the body is like someone reading. Its head popped off a while ago because it cracked under the pressure, and I just took fire to it to like melt the plastic so that it all come back together, and it worked-ish. I mean, it's working now.
So you like literally fixed it using the elements of the world. Like, it's not like you just put a new bulb in.
Yeah, but that's not the cartoon part. It was more the just like it looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah, I know it does. It's very cute.
No, but it's really lit, cute. So it's doing the job.
It's lit, but I'm.
But it's. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, aka Spider-Verse 2.
Spider-Verse 2 was the highly anticipated sequel to Into the Spider-Verse, which was written and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
It was written by. Oh, are you talking about the first one?
First one actually had a lot of, like, it was like Phil Lord, Chris Miller, Peter Ramsey. That one had a lot of hands on it, which actually I think ended up helping it again. Or
I agree.
I don't know. It gave it that sort of extra touch. I mean, we remember the first one as, you know, really like making a breakthrough in the animation world and sort of like what animation could do as a style and how it brought like comic book influences and really felt like you were in the pages of a comic book on screen.
Yeah, people went crazy.
Yeah, we went crazy. It was all over the radio, the songs on the soundtrack. Yeah. It was a mega cultural moment.
It's crazy because I don't know. I feel like for a long time there were a lot of movies and people didn't necessarily want or need sequels as bad as they did for this one.
It's written by Phil Lord and Chris Miller again. Ken Powers, who also
wrote Soul,
which we have an episode on. So if you haven't listened yet, check that one out.
Second episode.
And Joaquin Dos Santos, who also directed with Ken Powers and Justin K. Thompson. What were your initial thoughts on the sequel?
It's hard to gauge a sequel because you're basing it off of something else. You have something to directly compare it. I always do the analogy of like Shrek 1 to Shrek 2. Of course we all love Shrek 1, But we can all also kind of agree that Shrek 2 is a better movie. Not because anything about Shrek 1 is lacking, but because Shrek 2 goes so freaking hard that that's at least my personal basis is this a better sequel to its first than Shrek 2 was to its first? And I think it was.
It's like, I perfectly understood that analogy and you're absolutely correct.
Thank you. I didn't know what your face was saying. I got nervous about my opinions.
No. It was yes. I'm into that. I think this was Shrek-2-ing.
Shrek-2-ing, yeah.
I don't know. It was like we got the characters that we loved from the first movie. We really got into the multiverse of it all with all the other new characters that we met. From our returning characters, we have Miles Morales / Spider-Man, who was played by Shameik Moore. Gwen Stacy, who we also got to know and love. Spider-Gwen, played by Hailee Steinfeld. And then we also got back Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker. Yeah. And then Spider-Man from another universe.
Yeah.
But then we also got these amazing new characters. We have Oscar Isaac as Miguel O'Hara / Spider-Man 2099. And you have Hobie Brown, Spider-Punk, played by Daniel Kaluuya.
Love him.
Issa Rae as Jester Spider-Woman.
Love her.
We had Pavitra Bhavakar, Spider-Man India, played by Akon Soni.
Such a good job.
And then we had an actual really fun villain, and I'd love to know your thoughts on that. Jason Schwartzman as The Spot.
He scares me. With just period. Only Jason Schwartzman can play The Spot because it was icky. I don't know how to describe it, actually. It's like he was already scaring me. Yeah, he was already scaring me. And on top of that, the character itself, like the character design is so like ominous.
Yeah, I really love the way the story took it. Having this character who seemed pretty benign, like the silly side character that you write off, and really turns into this very, like you said, ominous, just like
eerie. It's like icky. Like there's something about you that I don't like.
Very
and
slender
I can't,
man.
Very slender man. Oh, okay.
That's what vibes I was getting.
Yeah.
But it was just like, yeah, he ends up becoming quite the formidable protagonist.
Yeah.
Antagonist. That is the word that we're using. Word of the week is antagonist. Also, I think one of the biggest things that we were talking about before we started recording that we loved about this is the fact there's so much like diversity in this, and that there's like a lot of like people of color who like took the lead, lots of like,
yeah,
in both
behind
like,
the scenes,
yeah, behind the scenes and like amongst like the voice actors for the movie and like the characters themselves. It was just like really like just, I don't know, bringing a bunch of perspectives like that haven't been traditionally represented in comics, or like at least in comic adaptations, because obviously like these are all like comic characters, but like now bringing them to screen, I think like really has resonated with audiences. And it was just so cool to see just like all these different Spider-Mans from around the world, across the different universes. Jester, like she, like, you know, pregnant Spider-Woman. You have one of the Spider-Women who's like hijabi, like, so it's like really cool like seeing that on screen and like catching those little moments. And then you have like the more chaotic stuff, like dinosaur Spider-Man.
Like the actual the funny multiverse stuff and not just the like plot driven multiverse stuff.
But I really just think that it just adds like so much more to the story, and especially like in terms of like, you know, you have Miles who's like, you know, he's black and Latino, who like, you know, the relationships with his parents, and it's just like seeing that sort of like Latina mom
like, yeah, which
at work,
right? Like everyone, the biggest thing about Spider-Man
snaps
ever
Puerto Rican
is always that like, oh, everyone is so tired of the same, like Uncle Ben dies and then he avenges Uncle Ben, and it's he lives with his aunt because his parents, everyone is so tired of that story.
Well, it's a big plot point though, I think.
No, exactly,
canon, like, event, which has become an actual term now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now that we're talking about about it being canon in the movie or whatever, but like everyone's so tired of that. And like they did in this one, they did a really great job of expanding those themes without making it trite. We'll get into it in a second when we do the summaries, but like so much of the plot of this movie revolves around like their families dying. And like while that is very key to the Spider-Man thing, it didn't feel like it always does in the Spider-Man's movies, where it's like, oh, here they're gonna kill Uncle Ben again.
No, actually, that's so bleak when you think about it. Like, the fact that it's, like, inherent.
Oh, this movie's devastating.
Yeah, like, the fact that it's just, like, for all like these superheroes, it's like you have to have lost someone mm-hmm. in order to like become like the hero you were meant to be.
And on top of that, then they have, and we'll get into this too, because it's going to talk about identity. You get into this whole like everyone, the superheroes in this universes, in these universes, know that like that is like a very like point blank thing about superheroes, even in these universes and in the Marvel universe or whatever. They know that they don't want to lose anyone, but oh, here I'm a superhero. That means I'm going to lose someone. Mm. And so like, even if you haven't, you have like now this pressure that like it's going to happen just because you're a superhero. Like that's just quote unquote canon at this point. And so like you get that with like how Gwen like deals with her identity too. It's like she yeah. doesn't want to lose, you
yeah,
know,
like it like revolves around the fact that she lost her best friend, yeah. like her Peter Parker. And then, like, you know, like, not wanting to, yeah, bring anyone else in.
Yeah, and her dad, and it's just a lot.
But, no, who did you relate the most to from, like, the characters?
Gwen. I like Gwen.
Gwen's cool. Gwen's,
yeah, I like Spider-Gwen, Spider-Woman.
It's not that I, actually, no, you know what? I loved Hobie Brown, Spider-Punk.
Spider-Punk is cool.
I just thought... just like the contrarianness of it all. I
you know what?
With.
I can see that for you.
So he was a fun character, and you know, his involvement in the story is like I thought was major. So I do. That's yeah. He was my character, and I love Daniel Kaluuya. So
I love him. With him, they did a really good job of like it being a little bit extraneous, but also like the character itself being a little bit like extraneous without hindering the storyline or making it seem random. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. yeah. Like,
but I mean, I think that's just the nature of his character, like the randomness of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, it's yeah. like,
it's yeah.
he's a wild card.
He's a wild card. And I don't know. He's just, it was a good one. That's a good answer. I like that you said that.
I do think, just to like give a run through, it's mm-hmm. like, it's been a year since the events of the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Miles has like sort of like moved on with his life, but he's still like
he hasn't yeah.
he's still like missing Gwen yeah. who has gone back to her own universe, and Gwen is going through it
yeah,
like Gwen, and I feel yeah. like I don't know if you saw like any of the sort of like theories about Gwen like allegory yeah. for trans acceptance.
Yeah, well, I don't even think that it's quote unquote an allegory. I think she is a trans character,
like it's canon.
Yeah, I yeah. think it's canon.
But I just loved that it was like the allegory sort of like between like the story between her and her father, and like not being able to move on from Peter's death, and then B, like sort of like hiding her identity like from everyone, her father included.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that like her father, Captain Stacy, like loves her, but it's just like one of those things where it's just like hard to break through if you're not being completely honest.
Yeah.
Like on both sides. And they're brought back together when Gwen has to stop the Vulture, which is like, who's coming from another yeah. universe.
He said, I failed in this one, I'm gonna come to another one.
Yeah. The Renaissance Vulture, which I loved the style for that.
Yeah.
It was giving very like Leonardo
yeah.
Da Vinci, like Vesuvian Man?
Vesuvian
is that
Man,
that?
Yeah.
It's
hashtag the inventor.
Yeah, hashtag the inventor.
Listen to last week's episode.
She meets another spider. Actually, no, two more spider people from other universes.
Yeah.
Miguel O'Hara yeah. and Jess Droom.
Jess.
So they come in with an assist. And in the process, Spider-Gwen's identity, like Gwen's identity is exposed to her father.
Mm-hmm.
Which prompts her to run away mm-hmm. back to Miles' universe. And then they're brought back together. And because how they meet is that like he just stops him at a bodega.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're the lamest like supervillain. And then, but from what I remember, it was just like, you know, the sort of throwaway character, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's like the spot. And then like you find out like there's this big history from the last movie that like, Miles is basically the Spot's origin story.
Yeah.
Miles' transformation to Spider-Man. Miles obviously like seeing Gwen was like, you know, they have this beautiful bonding
yeah.
moment. They actually, part of me was like saying like there was like a lot of back-to-back scenes like back in like the first act of just like conversations, which I didn't necessarily mind, but I did notice after a while. I was like, oh, wow, we're having a lot of heart-to-hearts back-to-back-to-back. Two back-to-back heart-to-hearts with Miles and Gwen, which are really nice. And then, like, the sort of, like, upside-down, like, conversation that they have. I thought that was a beautiful scene. And then you have this really, like, beautiful heart-to-heart with Miles and his mom, who, like, she wasn't, like, a huge character in this movie, but I really love this moment that they gave her. And then it's like, you know, Miles like finds out about this club. He's like, why aren't I a part of it? And it's like, oh, it's really exclusive. And then when Miles like sneaks in like into like the headquarters, it's like he realizes, why the hell is every single
spider person here but me?
And like, and then that's how he meets Miguel O'Hara, who as Oscar Isaac himself has said, is like the only unfunny Spider-Man to exist.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also a vampire? Do I have that clear?
Oh, I don't know.
He's like, he's got like the...
Yeah, but
if you're not seeing this when I'm like... Fangs.
Oh, is that... Yeah, maybe he is. No, there's no... Yeah, just from like a different universe where people have fangs.
Like, like, I think that the biggest takeaway is the fact that there's all these different spider people. And, like, they're so, like, representative of society and, like, what we see. And I think that's one of the reasons that this movie, like, resonated so much with, like, so many different kids and adults is because, like, to a degree, everyone has someone that they can look to and, like, identify themselves with. Even if it's just Oscar Isaac that he has fangs.
Yeah. Miles is there, and then he discovers, like, Miguel is the one in charge of the spider people. And Miguel, like, straight up tells him why he's, like, not, like, in the club, quote-unquote, is that it's, like, you're not a real Spider-Man. Which I think, like, that in itself, like, we're talking about, like, diversity and inclusion and all that. And, like, the fact that it's, like, the one of the big themes of the movie is, like, is Miles Morales a, quote-unquote, real Spider-Man? And I feel like it's definitely, like, art imitating life in this case of, like, people, you know, saying that, like, Miles Morales isn't the real Spider-Man. Like, he doesn't count. Like, it's always going to be, you know, white boy from Queens, like, Peter Parker. And obviously we all love Peter Parker. He's an amazing character in, like, all iterations, at least, like, at least my point of view. But... like, I think it really just becomes really interesting that it's, like, you know, this Afro-Latino kid from Brooklyn. First of all, like, the creation of his character to begin with, but it's, like, also the fact that it's, like, yeah, why is there debate to this day of whether or not he counts as Spider-Man?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. This is, like, a weird little side note, but I was talking to my sister the other day because Percy Jackson just came out. She loves Percy Jackson.
I love it, too.
And so she watched the movie because I made her watch it when I got her into the books. She loves the books, whatever. One of my favorite things about this movie and one of my least favorite things about Hollywood in general, and it's that children's media itself is very, like, white-centric. Whereas, like, you, like, in Hollywood in general, like, movies and TV shows, like, there's a lot of, like, push to like, be more representative and, like, have, like, different types of people represented on screen. I think children's media, that was a little bit later. So when my sister, when Percy Jackson, I was like, oh my God, Percy Jackson's out. Like, let's watch it together. She like, we, she started and she goes, she paused it like 5 minutes in and she turns to me. She goes, I'm really happy that this exists. I really like, thank you for like getting me a Disney Plus account so I can watch this. I want this kid to be Puerto Rican. And then she just turned around and pressed play again and loves it. And again, my sister has blonde hair and green eyes. Like, it's not that she herself wanted her, like, to be quote unquote represented in Percy Jackson. I just think that she had her own experience of the books. And then, like, when the screen doesn't match that, it, she just has to, like, comment about it. And I think that with superheroes, it's the same thing because there's so much content in the comics and there's so many years of, like, all these characters existing here and there and so many different iterations that something like Spider-Verse where you have this space to actually introduce all of these iterations is really important as a viewer, but also for its like timeliness. I think that in 20 years, we're going to watch this movie and it's gonna not feel outdated, whereas we watch the Spider-Man's movies from 10 years ago and they feel outdated.
Like, I agree with you there. Like, I feel, and maybe it's also like the fact that it's like, because it's animated, like it's gonna have this like timeless feel to it. Who knows what technology will be like,
yeah,
you know, in animation, or like what, right, style is gonna be used. But I do think that partly because of its style and partly because of like all the influences that it takes, like from different eras, different, mm-hmm, different like demographics, like I do think,
yeah,
that it does have this like cool, like timeless feel to it.
Yeah. And like at the end of the day, sure, like animations, like physically how it looks does affect like the rewatchability of it later on. But at the core of it, like we're watching things for the story and for the characters. Like there's a, like Shrek 1 doesn't look as good as Shrek 5, but there's a reason we watch Shrek 1 and not Shrek 5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I think that like this movie is truly a timeless movie.
For its timeless nature, like it's also like these like specific, like culturally specific moments. Like one of my favorite sequences in the movie, mm-hmm, is like when the new spider gang that's formed of Miles, Gwen, Hobie, and Pavitra Prabhakar's character like go to his world of like Mumbai, Mumbatan.
Yeah.
Like,
Mumbatan, like, that's
in
crazy.
India. And it's just like sort of like, you know, you don't say chai, like you don't see TT,
yeah,
it's just chai. Or like you don't say like bread, like it was just, yeah, like these fun moments. And it's just like seeing his world and seeing how, like, despite these culturally specific things, how much it tightly parallels, like, you know, he has his own Gwen, he has his own Aunt May, and like it's just like this world, like, you know, like he's got the great hair,
yeah,
like he doesn't work out, but like he's fit,
yeah,
and I don't know, it was just like fun. And like it's part of like, you know, you getting like the little gag that these movies have of like, oh, let's introduce ourselves, like, mm-hmm, I'm, and it's like the whole origin story, yeah, like in a quick,
it's very comic book-esque, and I love that.
But yeah, I just like, it was like, that was a really cool sequence, which then like the turn that it takes when like, Miles like sort of disrupts this canon event, or like Miles influences Pavitra to, mm-hmm, to disrupt the canon event, yeah, of letting, his Gwen's father, like his version of like Captain Stacy, like die, like instead, like, he's able to, they're able to save them both, disrupting this canon, yeah, event, and then basically like causing a tear in like the universe. And like, it's another point for like the spot and, mm-hmm, you know, and it's just like the fact of like, you know, that with all the joy, like then it's just like, you can never be happy for too long. Like when you're, yeah, a superhero.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like that was just like that sequence was like very standout for me.
Okay. No, earlier I said that the character I related to most was the Gwen character, but my favorite part was when she came back to her dad, or like she comes back to confront him and he's like, quit the police force.
Oh yeah.
And I know like that was one of like, that's like a, obviously less action packed scene and it's just more like about the character,
mm-hmm,
but like back to like the whole, I don't even know if it is quote unquote an allegory. I think it is just part of the story that like she's a trans character and like it's such a commentary on what happens here today right now, where like the police force isn't at all like a resource that trans people have.
Yeah.
You know, anyone not like a white.
Yeah. Anyone deemed quote unquote like different.
Different
outsider.
Or other. Yeah. So like, while this movie feels really fantastical and like there's universe jumping and multiple versions of the same thing, I don't know. I really like this part because it like kind of settles the movie a little bit. Also, like her getting kicked out of the Spider Society is like a whole other thing. But
yeah, because it's like at the end of the day, it's sort of like her fondness, like, yeah, despite her denying it for Miles.
Yeah.
Like sort of like is what sort of like, quote unquote, like it's not Gwen. We're not saying it's Gwen's fault.
No.
But.
No.
But it's sort of, it kind of is Gwen's fault. But it kind of is Gwen's fault.
Kind of is. But yeah, I don't know. I just like this moment. It feels like very grounding, very beat, very like, let's step into your like, the viewer universe for a second. Let's talk about this through a different lens. And then let's go back to the story. Like, I don't know. I like those little cutaway moments.
No, I think it didn't work well as a sort of like, as a subplot. And just, yeah, like, you know, like, just like really expanding on Gwen's character, which like we met her in the first movie, but this really just like dives deep into like her motivations, her like emotional arc, like from both the first movie and now, like the fact that she's still going through this grief. I mean, like, it's so funny because for all these, like, what all these kids animated movies that we've been watching lately, grief is such a big part of them.
Yeah,
like all like the ones I feel like that we've talked about so far have had some element of grief. Yeah, which I don't know if it's speaking to the current moment because this is like all movies that have come out within like the last year or so, or if it's just like really like it's all been, it's always part of it, I guess, because I think about movies like Lion King, like every Disney movie where a parent dies or is dead. I'm like,
grief, even like Lady and the Tramp,
like it's just like grief, like in one way or another, loss just like pervades in these movies. I mean, you have like the fact that like when, you know, Miles goes back, it's like the chance that he realizes that, oh my god, like if it's canon event to like lose an uncle, if it's canon event for a Spider-Man to lose like sort of like the captain, the police captain, like in their universe, and he realizes, wait, my father, you know, is captain of the police. He's next. Like, you know, it's like the realization that he could lose his father.
Yeah, the stakes get heightened in a very real way that is very canon to the Spider-Man
lore.
Yeah, that's exactly the word. To the Spider-Man lore, it's like a very, it's a very canon event to Spider-Man lore where Spider-Man's family is in peril.
Yeah.
And it's Spider-Man's both fault and job to fix it.
Yeah.
So.
And the fact that it's like, again, that like, you know, wanting to prevent it. And then it's like not even that it's circumstances. It's like the spider people themselves that like become the villains in a way are like, we actually like can't let you prevent this. It's like we have been traumatized and you therefore must also be traumatized. Like you can't be funny otherwise. And it's like it leads to this amazing chase sequence where like Miles is trying to escape back to his universe to like save his father. Yeah. And it's like they're literally every Spider-Man like and this and it's like an incredible like one of the another amazing part of the movie.
So, yeah.
I think like these like fun moments and gags and like the characters like interacting with each other and like the whole like the spider like men pointing at each other meme. And as we know, he's eventually able to escape like back to like back to a universe, let's just say, with the help of Hobie, Spider-Punk, who's like who we thought was against him this whole time,
right?
And ends up helping him in the end. And then Spider-Bite, who's played by Amanda Stenberg, who's sort of been playing like a quiet character the whole time, and sort of like comes in to save the day, which, you know, as hero unsung heroes and he's able to escape. First of all, I also think it's very interesting that it's like one of like this whole moment where it's like the character he least expected to help him helped him instead of the person he most expected, which was, or the people he most expected, which was A, Gwen, and B, Peter B.
That's true.
Who like, you know, he is expecting to help him and literally is just like, no, you need to like, there's going to be other moments, but you need to like face this canon event.
Yeah.
And it's like, so the people he expected to be on his side, like sort of fail him. And the people he least expected come in to save the day. And speaking of Peter B., I love that he uses as a sort of way to try and coax Miles is using his own child.
Oh my god.
I love Mayday.
Yeah, Mayday.
I loved that child. He was so cute.
I want to see a picture of him.
My favorite spider person.
Mayday.
But yeah, like I love like the fact that like Peter B is like just sunk into like fatherhood. It's like he's just dad now. He is father.
It's so cute.
But anyways, but speaking of fathers, Miles like going back to save his family. I also thought that sequence was really well done.
Yeah, it was.
Where it's like Gwen is trying to look for Peter in one world and we have like
no one knows that he's like over here.
Yeah, it's like no
everyone
no,
told no. him don't and he was like, "Okay."
Well, no, it's like the fact that he goes into what he thinks is his universe. Yeah. He talks to his mom who's like acting weird.
Yeah.
His father is
around. Uncanny Valley.
He's looking for. Yeah, it's like
he was in his own Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like it was a like it's so crazy like watching this in theaters. like the slow realization that he is not in his own universe, yeah, and that he's actually in the universe where like the spider that bit him came from.
Yeah. And then he finds out that the spider that bit him
and should have bitten
in that universe
was supposed to bite him.
Him. Yeah. But in that universe.
Yeah. In that universe. That universe.
Which is not him. It's a different, it's but, a different person.
But also it both confirms the fact that Miles was meant to be Spider-Man because Miles Morales was meant to be Spider-Man.
Miles Morales was, yeah.
But always. This Miles, because he didn't become Spider-Man, instead became his own first villain. As we recall from the first movie, his first villain was his own uncle, who also died.
Yeah.
The Prowler.
Love killing the uncles
here. Uncles. Miles. No, I'm like, literally, Miles is Spider-Man. He had his dad. But yeah, like, he's confronted with himself, who instead of becoming the Spider-Man he was meant to be, Miles became, he instead takes on the fate of the Prowler. And you have these characters face-to-face. And I think it's so cool that they brought on Jarrell Jerome to play the Prowler.
Yeah, Miles. The Prowler Miles.
And it brings us to a really crazy climax, which has an amazing soundtrack. Like, I'm still so mad that this didn't get nominated for like best score.
I was actually looking at that earlier, and it's like, we talked about the soundtrack in the first one, how it's so good, and then this one, it didn't really slap. And I was like, no, I thought it slapped. I was listening back to it again. I was like, it didn't slap. It's just the, like, complement of the score plus the soundtrack was a slap all throughout, but it is the score. The score does take the cake.
It's like, and especially like in the finale, scene. When you have, like, Gwen sort of, like, create this sort of like super, like this mini super spider group of like all the allies that they've made in this movie to go and save Miles once they realize what's going on. And it like leads us, you know, it's like a perfect cliffhanger between that and then Miles being faced with Prowler Miles. And it's just like really like the best comparison in terms of like trilogy structure. And I think they've done this so well. It's like, it literally feels like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like Back to the Future Part 1 ends with like, you know, like how this the first Spider-Verse movie ended with, it's like Miles back in his normal world, but wait, like Gwen has come back to get him.
Yeah.
And that's like a moment that we repeat in this movie. And it's like Back to the Future where like, you know, it's like Marty's back to his real life, but wait, Doc has come back to be like, Marty, you got to save your son. And like they go back.
It feels like it's its own prequel.
Yeah. Almost. It feels like a prequel. And then this one is like where the crazy like action happens.
Yeah.
And it ends like not only with a major cliffhanger, but like with the heroes losing effectively.
Yeah.
Like and it's like same thing with Empire, with like the Star Wars original trilogy.
Okay.
Empire Strikes Back. It ends with the heroes losing and like in grave peril. And like same thing here. Like, I just think it's so exciting. And, like, obviously, like, you know, I feel like it's going to be hard to guess what comes, but I think we can have a good, like, pretty good idea of, like, how the next movie, beyond the Spider-Verse, another adverb. will sort of, you know, take it
take
the next level.
Beyond.
And,
But yeah, I feel like that what you mentioned earlier about like this being a really fleshed out trilogy. This is the second movie, and because it came so much later than the first one, I think that people weren't expecting it to be so, for the ending to be so like grave, to be continued, to be so like, for it to have been such an antithesis of the whole movie. Because like you said, like the spot is like this like weird little guy, and then it becomes very ominous and like and then so much of the movie is just about like introducing characters, and everyone's like, you're like vibing throughout the movie, you're having a good time, the soundtrack itself like is very like hype, and then the ending is just like boom bam out of nowhere, and I don't think that people were like expecting that.
I wasn't but expecting it,
no,
that
exactly,
I was
but
not
it
ready
is,
for that,
but that's what it is. It's a trilogy. It's the middle child of a trilogy. Yeah, it's like it's the dark before the dawn when you look at it up here, but we're
Amen.
Looking at it up here.
We love story structure.
I know,
across
we really do.
Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such like that is like such a good point. Like yeah, this is like the point. Like if all three movies were part of one movie, this would be the dark before
this
the dawn.
Yeah.
This is like the low point.
Yeah.
And like, obviously we'd be remiss to not talk about this movie without talking about its amazing animation style. What do you think is like, what do you think like has this like style like stand out for you? What do you think makes Spider-Verse stand out from like, you know, all the other like animated movies past and like present, like going on right now?
Okay, this is gonna be so niche. The color palette.
Oh my God, tell me more. I'm not interested. I literally, that's not what I, the first thing I would think of, but yeah. I'm interested. Continue.
Well, I was thinking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how we talked about that. And like, not that the animation style is the same, but like as a viewer that's used to a certain type of animation style, you experience these different things as different. So what stood out for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to me was like the fact that it was sketchy, right? So that was meant...
They look like drawings.
That was the purpose. It looks like drawing. That's a drawing. The color palette in that one was also incredible too. But in this one, the fact that like there's so many different universes, there's so many different Spider-Mans, but the color palette was able to stay pretty consistent throughout the whole movie. That really like wowed me from beginning to end. Like the purples, the blues, the whites, the fact that their suits are black, like... I don't know, like, whereas, like, Spider-Man is so red, blue coated.
Yeah.
This one is just, like, it takes it to, like, such a different level. And, like, yeah, the colorways, the color palette.
Yeah, and, like, I actually, like, I think that's really cool because then those are consistent. But then the only thing that stays different from the others is the spot in his own, like, universe, yeah. in his own influence. It's, like, that black and white, exactly. like, sort of, like, you don't know where it's going to go. But it's, like, very, like, obviously two ends of that spectrum.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like the rest of it. Feels like pretty like yeah and that consistency
and
like,
it's almost ranges. Dreamlike and yeah. even Gwen's color palette where it's like very white and like very blue pink
white yeah
purple, pink blue yeah
and
pink
they
blue
say white it's yeah. not a trans allegory.
I know they're not saying that.
No,
her dad had the jacket, she has the flag, the pin. Oh yeah, yeah, the pin on the jacket.
Yeah. But anyways,
the colorways. What about you?
I wanted to mention just because it's like I loved like going into those different universes where it's just like the spot is like exploring his own abilities mm-hmm. to like multiverse jump.
Yeah.
And like there is this one really cool animated sequence, and it's like you gotta have a give a shout out to he was 14 at the time. I don't know how he is now. 14-year-old animator Preston Mutanga, who animated the whole Legoverse portion of the movie.
Okay.
And like again, like. Literal teenager.
Yeah, literal teenager.
But I do, again, I just, like, love, like, the fact that it's, like, yeah, you said color palette's consistent, but then the styles themselves, like, Hobie, like, has his own, like, sort of, like, English punk vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peter, it's, like, you know, like, he, like, this own, like, style, like, in Mumbai. Gwen's, like, more, like, washed out dreamlike.
Yeah.
You know, world, and then Miles is like more grounded, like, you know, Brooklyn,
you know,
barbecues and like, you know, going around. And then the beautiful cityscapes, like every time it's like in that universe, it's like just
even
like
those moments. Mumbaton or Mumbaton.
Yeah.
Cityscapes there.
And and then obviously we, like there's all the comic gags that we loved from like the first movie that are brought back into the second, like to remind you, like these are like, you know, it's like the love of the comic book art form and like showing that love on, like in animation, I think is like been a really cool like melding of these worlds and just like the fun chaos of it all. You can tell like, and I know there's been like stories about what the production process itself was like, but I will say animators, like, you did amazing.
Like, yeah,
God bless you.
You
created some major art. I'm sorry what you may or may not have had to go through for it to happen, but like kudos to you guys. Going back to the music, so like what we had been talking about earlier is that I was saying that it's like, well, I think the score in this movie is like just takes it to another level compared to the last movie. I feel the soundtrack itself does not slap as much.
No.
Like, while the first one, I just feel like the most memorable, like, stuff, like, sound-wise from the first movie were, like, all the incredible songs that came out and became, like, radio hits. Obviously, we have Sunflower, What's Up Danger, like, I'm Not Scared of the Dark. There's this, like, beautiful Juice WRLD song, Rest in Peace, Juice WRLD, that I really loved. And it was just like an incredible soundtrack. Like, I still listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
Like
the first one.
But then this one, I don't know. know. Like, yeah, I cannot tell you any songs from that movie.
Well, like I said, like, I feel like I experienced it very, like, in a hype way. Like, mm-hmm. the whole thing was very hype. And then, like, now looking back on it, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Because, like, the emotional parts, because there were so many emotional parts about this movie, had score.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Magic score as well.
Well, I think that's why they're complementary. It's mm-hmm. the music was for a reason, the score was for another reason, and they worked together. Maybe that's why it wasn't nominated for score.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
Because it really, like... I've been watching clips of, like, people doing live performances of the soundtrack, like, of the finale with them. And I'm just like, how did this not get nominated? Why won't the Academy, like, accept animation as, like, a very legitimate, like, medium of film? Like, please.
They're busy every doing day, something else.
Like, they keep on doing Guillermo del Toro so dirty.
So dirty.
Like, every this day. Man just wants animation to be brought into, like, the Academy mainstream. That's all this man
all
wants.
All he wants. That's his... spark his purpose.
And so
what do you think part three will be about?
Well, I mean, like, obviously we end on such a cliffhanger. I'm gonna assume, like, it's gonna take a minute, but they will, like, when team Gwen is eventually gonna find Miles. Though I am curious, like, I to see, like, how Miles and his, like, Earth 42 version are gonna get on. And especially with the fact that it's also, like, a world where his uncle Aaron
is still alive.
Which, like, again, it's like, this is, like, a very, and, like, the fact that it's like his uncle Aaron is alive, but his father is dead. Because, like, again, like, it was Miles who was, like, Earth 42 Miles who was supposed to become Spider-Man, not, like, our Miles.
Our Miles 65, I think.
I don't know.
I think it's 65, but 65. That might be Gwen's number. I don't know.
But like, basically, like, he, like, does, he, like, he who was not supposed to quote unquote be Spider-Man, he's the one that had all the canon events of, like, his father, like, you know, his father dying. So I do think, like, I am interested in seeing how these two sort of compare their lives, how, like, you know, seeing them face off in battle, I'm gonna guess, like, they're gonna have a big fight in the next one, and seeing how the spot, like, is gonna come, like, how his, like, role is going to expand, and, like, what, you know, like, his, how his arc is gonna turn out, because I kind of feel bad for Spot, like, he gets shafted throughout so much through the beginning, and then it's like, you know, that sort of resentment building, I guess you could consider him, like, an allegory for what, like, like,
no, but that is a good talking point, because if we look at it as a whole trilogy, like, the Spot's villain era is kind of over. Like, or
no, over. I feel like he hasn't been defeated yet.
Well, yeah, exactly. He hasn't. I don't know. I just feel like it's going to come back, and I feel like he's meant to 180. But that might just be me.
No, I, like, wait, what do you mean?
Like, in the third movie, he's going to not be the villain in that one.
Like, you think he's going to have a redemption arc?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, at the end, the real antagonist at the end of this one, the, like, like, across the Spider-Verse, is, like, Miguel O'Hara.
Yeah, exactly, that too.
Do you think he's going to become, like, do you think he'll be, like, also, like, a bigger antagonist? Or do you think he'll, like, have a redemption arc?
Based off of this one, is the Spot has a redemption arc, and Miguel O'Hara just continues to become more and more of a villain.
Interesting. I think it's going to be the opposite.
Yeah, that's
for me.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
for me. I think Miguel will have his redemption arc. Like, he'll, like, realize the error of his ways. He will overcome his trauma with the loss of his daughter. And then the Spot is going to have this big, crazy villain moment. Though I am interested in seeing in what way that will flesh out and how it'll relate to, like, the theme of the trilogy as a whole.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. That's, like, sort of what I have in mind. That it's, like, Vader being, like, the main villain of the series does or the main antagonist of the series does eventually have an redemption arc. Meanwhile, Palpatine is just, like, the overarching, like, you know, villain, period.
Yeah.
And then gets defeated.
You know what? Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to stick to mine.
Okay. I'll stick to mine. But we will see.
We will see. And you know what? Because the third one is supposedly coming out in March.
It's coming out in March already?
Allegedly. I know. So, like, we'll see sooner than we think we'll see.
Let's bet on it.
Okay. You heard it here first. All five of you listeners.
What do we rate this one?
Ooh. I'm going to go with the 10 out of 10.
Nice.
We had some gasps in the audience.
Honestly, like, just like again, after going through everything and how what a revolutionary one it is, I think I'm gonna agree. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Yeah, it's great. It's, what am I gonna do? Give it a 9 after I just said it Shrek-tude?
I'm like,
you can't. I can't do it. What age do you want to be to watch this movie? You can give me multiple ages. I might answer multiple ages.
Honestly, like, this is like a movie, like, and I saw the first one with like my high school best friends, like, mm-hmm. when we were all in town. I definitely would have loved to have seen this in high school with like my best friends from high school. Like,
oh, that's so sweet.
Like the part two, definitely. Like, I would have loved to have been like 15 to 17 years old watching this.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
That's cute. You?
Middle school. Yeah. If I was like 11, 12, like sixth grade, seventh grade, this would have been like the perfect weekend plan. Again, me and my friends, but like, yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I would have hopped on Facebook right after and like written a little thing about it.
Or a little thing on Letterboxd or Twitter.
What? On Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yep. Oh, 2009.
That was the social
That's
media.
That's the vibe.
Who would you additionally cast?
I'm going to steal your answer from Soul. Sterling K. Brown.
Sterling K.
Brown. I want Sterling K. Brown on the third one of this one.
Like what type of character?
Maybe a villain? Or maybe not like the villain of the movie, but
no,
like,
but like
no, I take it back. I want him to be like the villain, like something like surprise us, make it forget about the spa, forget about Miguel O'Hara, give me like
surprise
left field, give me like a brand new villain.
Ooh, that's Sterling K. Brown. He would be great. Like he has like I feel like he could go there if he wanted to.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I love that.
If not, I'll take him as a Spider-Man, but. I want a villain.
No, I like that.
Okay.
For me, like, I just, like, I think Oscar Isaac, and I'm just, like, I love to have, like, Pedro Pascal as, like, a character.
He would be such a funny little Spider-Man.
Yeah, like, have them work off each other. I feel like, yeah, he would be Spider-Man, or maybe someone
he could be Pedro
World
Parker.
That snaps sense into him. Pedro Parker. Yeah.
Yeah, even
if
it's just
my case for me.
Anytime, even if it's just like a little cameo bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. What part of the movie could you do away with? We just rated it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, but I will say there again, when I said earlier, it was like act one did feel a little long.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I may have trimmed some scenes here and there. It just felt like a lot, or I would have moved things around. Like I said, I love the nature of the conversations in the movie. I felt like the heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
I felt they were important. But I did notice how they'd be like back to back to back. I was like...
So you would get rid of one of them?
I would either get rid of one of them or like, you know, put some different business in between them so that it doesn't feel like we're getting like,
I can see that.
Front-loaded with like the messages of the movie that we need to carry with us so we realize by the end of the movie, like that's what they were saying all along.
Yeah, I'll second that. You know what? I'll second.
And then...
Ultimate question. Does this have the Frozen effect?
And if you don't know, which we hope you do by now, is this a movie that you would rewatch nonstop if you were a kid?
I think it does.
I feel like it would be one of those things where it's just like I would probably rewatch, but like once the whole trilogy was out.
Okay,
like
I see that.
I rewatched, like I love to rewatch Back to the Future trilogy.
Okay.
I would like
right, but not necessarily be back to the reason that there are Harry Potter marathons and not just a random Harry Potter movie playing on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. No, I would rewatch it. I think that the fact that it ends on a cliffhanger would like haunt me so much I would have to just constantly be watching it. Like it wouldn't be one of the ones that it ends on a cliffhanger, I'm gonna forget about it until the next one comes out. It's very much like I would need to rewatch it over and over again to make sense of it,
like Inception.
like Inception, but also like Harry Potter 7. You know, like that ended, I went home and I didn't read the Harry Potter books, don't at me, but like that ended, I know
I'm sipping my water, by the way, if you want to know what I'm looking
at. I walked out of the theater of Harry Potter 7, went home, grabbed my mother's Harry Potter 8, read the second half of the book immediately that same night. I was like, I must know. And because I had like this like custom of like watching the movies and being okay to wait for the next movie to come out because I knew that they were coming, that was okay for me. Not with that one. And I feel like this movie would be the same way. In that, like, I would go
if you
home.
Had.
I, like, would stop finishing watching it. And I'd be like, I need to watch it again because there's the only thing that will satiate me right now is Spider-Verse 2.
Mm-hmm.
So what alternate title would you give it? Mine's a little boring. I just cut out the Spider-Man part. It would just be Across the Spider-Verse.
Back to the Spider-Verse. Back to the Spider-Verse.
That's a good one. That's an excellent one. The Spider-Verse strikes back.
Yeah.
That's an excellent one.
More
adverbs.
More.
But yeah, okay.
Under the Spider-Verse.
Under the Spider-Verse.
And that brings us to another end of another episode of FYC.
Yep, and this was part of our Oscar series, so stay tuned for the rest of our episodes on the Oscar nominations.
We have a lot of exciting movies, so yeah. We're excited to discuss and hear your thoughts of them as well. Now, Victoria, if you could live in an alternate universe, where would you live?
I don't know where it would be, but it would definitely be very fluffy. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't smell.
I want to live in Mumbai. Though I think that they really missed out by not calling it New Delhi.
New Delhi.
I really think they missed out on that one. But alas, not everything can be funny. Perfect.
Yeah, I guess maybe like a universe where there's trans rights. That would be nice.